Welcome to the SEO Insider with your host, Seth Price, founder of Blue Shark, taking you inside the world of legal marketing and all things digital.
Welcome. We're thrilled to be here today with Alex Valencia from We Do Web Content. I have known Alex for over a decade, one of my favorite people in the legal space. So thrilled you could be with us today, Alex.
Thank you, Seth. Awesome. Likewise, man. It's been a crazy year, and we've had a couple of these together, and I look forward to doing more, man. It's stoked. You being in the office is surprising. That background looks awesome.
This is all fiction. I'm sitting behind two kids homeschooling that are barely passing. It's a shit show.
Oh, man, I know it, dude. It's like we're having the same thing with the kids, although they went back to school. They're actually there full time now, but it's been a different year. They're having a hard time.
No, not good. And both our boys, as they've gotten to know each other, similar sort of adolescent years. It is not fun, and it is just getting them to focus and care about what's going on. It's been brutal.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. It's like they're not putting attention to it.
Which ironically will dovetail right into our world. I mean, like, you are Mr. Content, and for somebody who lives and breathes SEO, I get that without content you have no SEO. One of the things that I've always been enamored by for as long as I've known you is your ability to keep and scale content. It is not easy. I have a component of it myself with Blue Shark, and what we just talked about with the kids is not dissimilar to what we're doing with our employees or contractors. And just want to get your thoughts on during COVID, you are trying to scale and replicate something that is not easy to scale and replicate. How have you put the emotional turbulence of COVID into the mix as far as trying to manage and scale content?
Well, obviously scaling has been difficult. Surprisingly, COVID was great for us and special because we had such a huge 2019 growth that putting any new clients or new staff on hold till we altered the process for catching up, doing new training materials, adding new processes, and improving that allowed us 3 months to get that to work. So we started taking on new clients in June after we were already 3 months or 2.5 months into COVID. And what helped with that is, Yvette immediately jumped in and she's a master of process improvement because they're a Six Sigma background. So her and our amazing staff started adding new procedures for new hires, new training. And, in the legal world, there's so many specifics, right? There's so much that goes into a page of content. So many hands have to touch it. So many laws that we have to review. And especially when you're doing it nationwide with clients all over the place, your writers have to learn that, your editors have to learn that. So it's just building and growing upon that database that we have internally for that.
One of the things that I think is challenging, and people watching this, some people are going to say, I don't even want to pretend I'm hiring a Seth or an Alex, and a lot of people are trying it themselves. Let's walk people through what goes into the sausage making. Walk us through how you guys, when you see a page of content from what we do, web content, what has gone, how take me from A to Z in that process. How do you, what does it take to produce it?
All right. So we're going to go way into it. We're going to go deep because it's a great question that you ask. And I want our clients and everyone viewing and listening to realize how much work actually goes into it. So it really starts, if we're going from client to content page, we'll go backwards a little bit. It's the actual picking and choosing of those writers. And, you were gracious enough to reach out to me and say, hey, some freelancers that we both know are coming out. They go through 90 days of strict training before they're actually let go onto anyone. And sometimes, kind of like the movie Boiler Room, you're told, oh, you have a Series 7? Get the hell out of here, right? Well, with the same thing with a lot of writers is, this is what you've learned to do. Don't do it that way. You're going to do it our way. We have a format. We have a process. You're going to write this. This is how we want it done. There's a formula to it. And, we have to teach that. And there's certain things to research. There's certain about internal linking that they have to learn and external linking. So the writer goes through strict training. Once the writer's allowed to start writing.
I'm going to jump in for a second. So you, even at the writing stage, you're having them think about the internal links. It's not like you say, hey, I want these internal links on a page. You're having them, the writer themselves is helping to determine the internal links?
No. So it all comes from, I was getting to that. So we have to get the content strategy. Everything revolves around the content strategy. So once we take the client on, there's going to be a gap analysis on what's missing, on what content they do have, what content they don't have. And we want to go after the low-hanging fruit, right? If they do have some page content that's ranking, then we're going to rewrite that and put it through our software that we built that actually analyzes the top pages and lets us know, you know, this is exactly what you're going to need to make it either better or at least conform to what's already ranking on page from position 1 through position 10.
Right. So we'll we call it triage, right? You know,
right.
Check plus, check minus. This stuff is great. You know, leave it alone. This stuff needs a little bit of dusting off, and this stuff is terrible. You either have to combine pages, rewrite, but essentially rewrite.
Exactly. So, and then the rewriting starts on that, and then building out the content strategy for any new content. So once we have the strategies and the content manager instruct the writer. So the writer will get instructions, very specific instructions on the content, what the topic is, H1s, H2s, URL structure, and where to research for the internal and external links.
Interesting. I always assumed that because to me, I've always kept those things separated. Like I want the writers writing, and we then add the other components in afterwards. But we don't, we find, and again, it's just different ways of making the sausage that I've always found that like, it's hard enough to get somebody to write. I don't even want them thinking about any of that stuff. I just want the high quality, well-written, non-plagiarized, with correct law, and that our editing team goes in and adds those layers and strategies, but that getting these line people, that you're investing a lot in your base writer if they're getting all that strategy into the original draft. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, because we want to slow down the editing process. We want the editor to really look at, now they go in specific, make sure the links aren't broken, make sure the links are to the appropriate source. Obviously the grammar, the intent of the writing is there. So the editor really takes a fine tooth comb through it. And that's the first edit, right? So then it goes into the second edit. They review it for the internal links, make sure the SEO, and then the editor really kind of does a lot of the optimization where the writer's doing more of the writing on that final edit, and then it goes to client for approval. A lot of clients will return things quickly. Some of them have built a trust with us where it's like, all right, we know what you're doing, just go ahead and go to QA. Then it goes to QA, and then QA once again runs it, reviews it, makes sure, you know, all the information has been correct per the client, because we also have client profiles for all of our clients. So anytime a client doesn't like anything or wants to change, it goes into a database that the writer uses and reports back.
It reminds me of like when you take an Uber and you have a bad experience, in theory, that person will never get matched with you again. You
know, right.
It's similar, right? If somebody just doesn't like somebody's style, like don't round peg square hole, don't fight it. Just move on to another new writer.
Exactly. And we've had that. Some clients are like, you know, I don't want this writer anymore. I love this writer. Let's use this writer.
Let me ask you a higher level question. I know there's, but we could talk more. I want to come back to the system, but the ADHD forces me to do this. You know, there are lawyers out there. My law partner, Dave Benowitz, is a classic example. He hates all writing. If I gave him something he wrote, he would rewrite it. If he wrote something a year ago and I gave it to him, he would rewrite it. So the odds of us getting somebody that we can afford writing content, like web writing, as you mentioned before, isn't like natural writing. You're trying to say something, you're trying to get geography in there, you're trying to take case of law, you don't want to have too much, you don't want to have too little. There are all these things going on. Again, the old days was obnoxious, right? When we first met, you know, I had like a DC criminal lawyer in Washington, DC, who's charged with a DC crime. Like it was absurd, right? And over the years, Google's gotten smarter and we followed. But how do you deal with the lawyer where I don't love that writing, and anything you do is not going to be loved because they probably don't even love their own writing. It's people that are going to be critical of everything. But we both know that if you don't feed the beast and you don't have the necessary pages with the necessary optimization and then all of the link magic behind that, you're not going to make money. So how do you deal with the person who just hates all of the web writing? Do you have a philosophy of how you deal with those people?
We try to answer that question upfront when we propose to the client and let them know what we're writing to, who we're writing to, the grade level of the writing. You're not writing to your peers, but it still doesn't work. They start getting content and start reading and looking at it. They're like, man, this is an end. So we got to reiterate, look, just like we showed you all the case studies of every other client that we've written the same amount of content for the same way, it's working. You just got to let it work. And what we had to do is eventually hire a team of elite writers, like a way more expensive writer type, say, hey, if you want, you know, this New York Times article, Sarah's going to call you. She's going to interview and she's going to write an amazing piece of content for you, but it's going to cost you a whole bunch of money. That's the type of writing you want. I'm glad to charge you for it. You know, you can pay for it at premium, but we're going to continue writing this because this is what's going to help you rank and create the funnel.
You know, it's so funny. It's funny
a couple
you do
writers
that.
To write that for you.
I've aspired to do that, but I just basically, you and I both know that you're not going to get ROI from that. Now, it's one thing if it's a bio, it's a one page thing.
Right.
But the thought that very often those amazingly written pages are not going to rank nearly as well as ones that are following your tried and true formula of what works.
Right. And we can beat them up about it all the time. And we still get, you know, some complaints. Sometimes they understand it after three calls. Once they bring all management in and it's like, all right, we told you how this works. You know, because they beat the account managers and the editors a little bit. And there's only so many things you can fix before, you know, it took them so long to really get the keyword phrases and seeing how they're fitting in within the content, right? Like, you know, a California personal injury lawyer or a car accident lawyer and this. I mean, you still got to fit those in variation semantically. And there's still a lot of attorneys who are like, I don't like the way that sounds. I'm like, well, if we switch it up, you're not going to rank. Like, you know, it's an ongoing battle.
You know, there was an interesting Facebook post, kind of controversial. Conrad, one of our buddies in the space, posted about
yesterday,
content.
Right?
Yeah. This may air subsequently, but yeah, right before we recorded this, where he was discussing the fall of a website. And while I am, you know, I believe that there are many other factors that may have done this, you know, he's correlating it to some of the core algorithm updates, some of the content updates, where we did see weak content, you know, causing issues for people. I think it was probably an extreme example, and there are probably other major factors out there other than whether or not somebody blogs. But the, you know, there have been repeated algorithm updates sifting for high quality content. And it appears for the most part, Blue Shark and we do web content has continued to survive that cut. But I mean, in fact, I like it when those updates come because
right.
It's basically every time we get that on, you know, in mass, we do better than before because it's knocking out the people. Talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on can there be too much content? Are there times when it's more about quality than quantity? You know, I'll leave that open-ended for you.
So let me kind of talk about where Conrad's coming from, because we both know Conrad and he's preached this on stage and through blogs and on Twitter and through his own site for years. Conrad doesn't really mean no content. He just means bad, non-purposeful content. What a lot of attorneys, and I can't believe they're still being taught this, and is just blog, just, you know, just put up content. If you're going to put up content, just, you know, go out and write a blog, which kind of like that long form, well-written, beautiful article is not going to get you any ROI. You're just writing for the sake of writing. If you go back and look at analytics, no one ever even viewed or landed on that page. So when you're writing without purpose, without strategy, without any research, it's not going to go anywhere. Low quality content is going to hurt you too. But I think, like, you know, even George Murphy answered Iandale on there on the, I think it's the YMFL or something like that, you know, the Your Life. When you're writing and giving value within the content, it's always going to be purposeful. It's always going to drive traffic, right? Like when I advise someone that comes to us and, you know, can't afford us or just says, what can I do? Where can I do? Look up all your competitor FAQs and just start writing FAQs or do videos about them. That's good content. That's content that you're answering the user's questions. you're also appeasing Google while doing it. It might not be as well optimized and formulated like a Blue Shark or a WeDo Web Content piece, but it's better than just writing about a blog on a news story or a law that just recently passed.
You know, one of the things that I've seen over the years, and I was guilty of this back in the day, we followed the formula was laid out by some of the early pioneers like at Just Eat and others, what I call, you know, lovingly the regurgitated news blog. That right. was something that the fine laws of this world could scale at mass. It's yeah. easy. Outside writers don't need to be sophisticated. They can take an article. It's almost like being an AP, a writer at a local newspaper. Take the AP article off the Associated Press, mix right. it up a little bit, boom, you have a story. And, you know, there again, like everything, there's an exception. If you're doing it with a strategy of truck accident in your area, get the names of the people in it, maybe you'll get a hit. God bless. I get it. There is a strategy. But generally, it was just an excuse to scale content that wasn't geo-specific, but often not, certainly not, you know, rich, high quality content. And that one of the things we talked about triaging when we took over sites, and this I had to do this for my own sites, it's not like Price Benowitz sites were immune to this, was pruning those, you know, it's painful. You paid for a bunch of these, but that they're not fulfilling your mission. They're adding, you know, depth to or weight to your website, but without giving that clear message as far as the high quality content. They're not answering FAQs. They're basically filling space. And I think that one of those things that most legacy firms, now we're talking about new people have been doing this for a while, is recognizing that page count, while you want to not be at, you know, 20 to 100, you know, that page count, once you start getting above numbers in the thousands, it may be time to prune that less is often more. And that if you get rid of the irrelevant or, you know, restructure, but, you know, really often realizing that, hey, you know, we went through a process a while ago. Google said, hey, 500 words, we take that pretty seriously. We don't like having a lot. I know there are exceptions to every rule, but trying to keep things 500 words or more per page. Some people have different rules, but the idea being that there's a time to reduce and then actually say, okay, this is what's moving the needle now, which again, generally seems to be high quality content, which is why you're in demand. But, you know, get your thoughts on when is it necessary to reduce and not just add more for the sake of more?
Great question. So that should be happening quarterly, at least looking at it, especially if you are one of those legacy people that were doing news or spitting out a ton of content. But we're doing it quarterly now, where we're reviewing, going through analytics, because we're putting out so much content. A lot of it is relevant to each other. So we're writing, you know, practice area pages, sub-practice areas, tertiary pages, and then supporting like FAQs. We don't really do the blog thing anymore. But and then looking to see how that's performed quarterly and maybe just building it up into one skyscraper page. And even still, sometimes building that up into a long form page that answers all the questions still needs that additional supporting content, but it's reviewing on where they're going, what are they doing? Did the funnel convert? And what's happening? And we don't really look at bounce rate too much. If it becomes a big issue, then we'll add some kind of display video on there to keep them on site a little bit longer. But, you know, I think looking at it quarterly to see that the new content, and not the old content is still performing and pruning it. We're big on that.
Yeah, no, it seems to be big. Something I just had an internal debate, and I'm sort of crowdsourcing, so I have you. I'm going to bring you into the brain trust. You know, there are times, and I know you have some FU sites, particularly with your partners with Jason's shop, that, you know, they dominate a market. They're generally in the three pack. They're really very authoritative sites. When you have those, what are your thoughts on Bill? And you have your city and county pages for all of the areas surrounding the mothership and even satellite offices. But there's an entire rest of the state. What is your feeling on building out landing pages county by county? You're barred throughout the state. There's a pull and tug between doing stuff that's low quality. Now, the answer is high quality, yes. But what are your thoughts on building out countywide for a state, even where you don't have offices, to try to find additional traffic areas that may not have heavy competition, given the authority that you're holding statewide?
So we'll do that if it's okay with the attorney. Usually we'll get market share in those smaller markets when we go. Like one client started where they just wanted it a hit. So we'll do, they originally came on and just wanted to do Fort Lauderdale. Well, we got so much authority to the site that we started adding all the, you know, and you've been here before, you know, all the small cities surrounding. So those easily ranked right because of the authority from Fort Lauderdale. Then Fort Lauderdale grew so much that we started adding Orlando and West Palm and all these other cities.
Without an office. No office, with, just
so they have, yeah. So we started just going where the person would only have to travel like 10 to 15 miles to get to the satellite location.
Understood.
That they created
and, right, no, and I get that. So let's say you didn't have an Orlando office. Do you start putting information up 95 from West Palm? Obviously a lot of competition in West Palm, but as you move north of West Palm, less competition, you're going up 95. You know, you have a ways where it's sort of no man's land, less and less these days in Florida. But I guess my point is your thoughts on adding pages of content to support your statewide practice, even when you're not with direct offices there. Your authoritative wise, that site is probably ranking statewide in Florida for certain terms because of the authority you've built. So that if somebody's searching in that area, Google has a page to show. They can show your Florida page. The question is your thoughts on building content pages for areas distant from your office as an additional bite at the apple to build so that you now have Florida, you have Fort Lauderdale as your main silo, but are you going to allow Google answers for these other, you know, places that we only hear about on election night that are not maybe your main target geos?
It comes down to the client and their budget, right? I don't want to spend their money. It's not cheap to do the work that we do. So if it's a market they want to go after and they have referral partners, like, you know, I'm learning more and more, right? And we've been in this industry so long that it's such an incestuous business that if you partner correctly with other firms, other doctors, you can really refer each other a lot of business. So the one holding all the leads, all the content really has a lot of power within it. So it depends on really the aggressiveness of the law firm. If it's a law firm that, you know, it's like, wow, you can do that. Well, let's go national, right? I'll sell these leads and build relationships all over. So again,
and that's a whole nother conversation, right?
Right.
People come and say, hey, I want to rank outside of my geo. The short answer is, hey, you better get with a local strategy because if you don't have an office and there are 20
it's not gonna
lawyers
work.
There,
right.
It's just not going to work. Now, if you do a national strategy and you say, hey, I'll go where I'm doing something so specific and there's nobody else here doing, you know, birth injury in a town where there's no birth injury lawyer, yes, you may rank, but you're not going to rank when there's a better answer locally, presumably.
Exactly. And the local, and, you know, I always turn to you for local because I know it's one of your main strategies and you guys concentrate on it so well. And the conversation's been had so often about, you know, optimizing for local and the importance of it and, you know, really hitting hard on that GMB listing, right? For that local three pack. I know that's, you know, something that you guys do amazingly well for your clients. And it's one of the better lead generators for them, right? It's one of those great trackable opportunities.
Well, it's their opportunity to, you know, when you have, you know, juggernauts that have resources, some of whom show up nationally for searches, even when there is competition that are ranking for non-modified terms,
right?
That, you know, to a certain extent, the one thing that Google is egalitarian about is, hey, we're going to give you your immediate geo. It's there for the taking. You still have to do work. But,
yeah,
you know, if there is a juggernaut from Orlando, you know, who ironically, I just saw popping up with offices throughout my region starting January 2021. But the idea being like it allows you your little plot. And I think to a certain extent, that has been, you know, when I look back, if you look at the, and Google's facing its antitrust issues right now, when you look at how Avvo built up its sales machine, they had their free listings for lawyers and they would pop you into the top three or four. And it was like a drug. You're like, oh, this is really cool. The phone is ringing. I like this. Sales guy would call, hey, do you like this? Because you're not remaining there.
We're not going to keep
coming
you
right
there.
Back down. So
yeah.
If you want those paid spots, you're going to be paying these $1,000 CPMs. And instead, so I feel like that is one of the reasons why I love local, is it gives people an opportunity. Now, I know you do, you've done recently a lot of mass tort work where, you know, to use this is where there are no boundaries, right? You'll take the case right anywhere. And so you're just looking to monetize the traffic. And when you think of what the cost per click is on this stuff, that anything that gets you a bite, that's the beauty of, if you get the high quality content on an authoritative site, you know, every piece of content, as expensive as you are, you know, your retail price might be the cost of two clicks. So right, as expensive as you are, when somebody gets two, and let's say you want some sort of return, two to three clicks, that page is paid for itself. Now, I don't want to become the sales guy. How often do you get a sales pitch? Well, if you just get one client for this, it's paid for itself. Well, no, let's not go there, because you know nobody's talking about the 100 pages that don't get any clicks.
Exactly.
But that said, you know, the content strategy, you know, people say, oh, it's getting less visibility. It is. LSA is infringing. Paid ads are infringing. The map is infringing. That said, if you have high quality content and you can get it up on an authoritative site, every Valencia page that goes up is gonna be the gift that keeps on giving. It may not be as high volume, but the ROI is so much dramatically more, because you paid for it. It's yours, compared to, you know, when you're dealing with something where you're paying per click. Google's doing everything they can to force us there, but the idea that your ROI is going to get capped at some point there, but that you're able to get a recurring revenue stream if managed properly. I mean, that keeps Alex and his wife in business.
Yeah. Oh, it does, for sure. And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, there are pages of content that are supporting that aren't really meant for all that additional traffic. They're supporting the traffic pages. So, you know, that's kind of a sunk cost. But when you're creating an organic site, and you know this well, you're really creating a 24/7 asset for you. It's like that nonstop salesperson, where pay-per-click is that, you know, sunk cost. You can turn it on, turn it off. And there's amazing strategies for that with law firms. It's just the click is so expensive for specific terms. But with the content, you really have that ongoing salesperson that when someone is searching and that page is on your site, you have a very good chance of them coming up for that.
You know, in our remaining moments here, I'd love you to sort of address listeners that may be trying to figure this out for themselves. They have not thrown their hands up. They're like, hey, I want to give it a shot. Cause at least I can speak for myself. I started with, you know, building content, building links, you know, just scaling as much as I could in house. I happened to geek out enough that I turned it into something. But for a lot of people out there, what is your advice for people who are trying to create their own mini We Do Web content within just for themselves in order to service themselves? What do you wish you knew when you started out this process of systematizing content?
Oh, systemizing it. I don't know. I think when we started, we created a system because we started with volume, right? So the process was already created. So for someone who hasn't done that and didn't go into business to systemize and formulate content to be able to grow in volume, I would start with the advice of doing the research and seeing who your competitor is and what your competitor is doing, because it's not just the content, right? If you write the content, but you don't do the page title, you don't have the H1s, you don't do any of that, then it's not, Google's not reading it, right? So they can't see it. You're not getting, like, I see really good content on pages, you know, car accident lawyer, right? But then it's not localized. Like, so you're going after car accident lawyer nationally, your page title just says your law firm name and lawyer, right? So you just missed out on a lot of opportunity. So it's not just learning the content, but it's like, how am I optimizing the content, everything from the page title to the URL to everything, and thinking about that. And then creating a plan. Like, you know, Excel is everybody's friend. It's very easy to go through, you know, 10, I don't think 10 pages a month for someone starting off is a lot. So for them to dedicate, you know, 10 pages a month on what they're going to write, they should be 10 practice area pages, 10 of their most sought after cases that they'd want to gather, you know, whether it's car accidents for volume, brain injury for that, luckily one brain injury case that you're going to get. But think of the topics that are really going to drive business and write about that and localize it. It's important to localize it, make it specific to you, and create a silo around your website.
You know, and I'm going to sort of conclude with something, which is, okay, we have a lot of my friends and listeners here might have a contractor they have doing. They're not doing the writing themselves. They have a contractor. One of the things that I remember from when we first started was you hired somebody, they were doing stuff, and all of a sudden, you know, you looked at it, and at some point you realize, oh, this person's just ripping something offline. What are the process you guys go through to make sure, and again, if it's an in-house employee, it's different, but over the years, I'm sure you've used contractors. And what are the safeguards you've put in place to make sure that somebody's not just plagiarizing chunks or entire passages?
So we use Copyscape. We have a 15% allowable because we're also creating so much of the same redundancies and call to actions and the law firm name. So we allow for a certain percentage. So we're using Grammarly and Copyscape as our tools, but it's still manually looked at by the editor. So the editors get to know the writers so well that we have to look for self-plagiarism, right? So they have already wrote localized pages on another topic.
Right.
Yeah. Redoing the bullet list on self-plagiarism and making sure the editing team is catching that and removing it?
Well, okay, let me conclude with this then, which is, okay, this is probably, and we sort of touched on it a moment ago. We talked about, you know, getting statewide county pages, let's say, and the struggle there. You got the same law statewide, whether it be criminal, PI, immigration is national, right? How do you, Google doesn't, obviously, the first thing every lawyer asks me is, hey, can I just cut and paste the pages and change the name? No, obviously you can't do that. That's a no-no duplicate content. But how do you, this is not just a how-to, but it's a motivational thing. If you go to somebody and say, hey, I got 20 different locales I need a car accident page for. It is no small task, not just to write it one great page and not to do the old school spinning where you'd literally like have somebody in India mix the words up, but how do you make it fresh and different when it's the same law? But you literally, in a perfect world, if you were being efficient and you wrote, let's say you paid for that monster page. I went and got your New York Times person and they wrote the Denver car accident page. And then we wanted to get it for Aurora and Broomfield and all these other places. How do you make it fresh without plagiarizing or just making it low quality content? How do you make this something that Google wants?
So it's still going to be very similar, but the localization changes. You can use the courthouse, police station, you know, add certain links to external properties that change it up. You put a little history about the city and change it. The rest of the content, you're just, and again, going to make sure that the writer is not self-plagiarizing or pulling it from some of the other people. The problem isn't so much that they would pull it from an external source. It's because they've written so much about this that they're reusing what they've already written about it and then changing it enough. So our system that we created internally, it is capturing all the database of our written content and making sure it's falling in with that. So it's a tough job for the writer and the editor to make sure it's changed enough. But, you know, the percentages that come back that it hasn't been plagiarized are a lot better. You do see it every now and then, but, it's very difficult to do it. You just got to add those little nuances and little tweaks here and there to really localize the page. But usually where you see it is in the bullet point section, and it's really just changing that up in the wording.
Right. With that, as a follow-up, if you had 10 pages with the same law in different geographies, do you give that to one person because they then know the law and can rewrite it? Or do you give it to 10 different people, or do you mix it up so it's 5 and 5? Like, how do you allocate resources? Economies of scale wise, you'd want the same person to write them all, but is it humanly too difficult to make them that different?
Yes. So we'll usually have, depending on the volume of the client, 2 to 3 writers, maybe even more on one client. Some clients are getting over 100 pages because they're trying to compete against your juggernauts in like Orlando or people that are going nationwide. So there's teams that are actually just creating content for these specific clients.
Well, that's great stuff. Alex, thank you so much. I can't wait. We have a upcoming webinar part 2 with you, me, and Jason Hennessy. I cannot wait. God willing, get to see you in person this December.
January. Yeah, December and January, hopefully.
Well, do January. I'm hopeful, but not optimistic.
Yeah.
But December I control. So
Yeah. December will be great. That'll be awesome.
Very good. Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great day. Great being on the show. Appreciate it. Thanks, bud.
Thank you for tuning in to the SEO Insider with Seth Price. Be sure to check back next week for fresh insights into building your brand's online presence. Episodes are available to stream directly on Blue Shark Digital's website.